Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get started. So we are almost to the end of March Madness. It's coming on that quick, guys. We went a year waiting for it to come back, and now it's almost over. So the schedule, and this keeps getting me, the schedule this year just threw me off tremendously. Having it on Tuesday instead of Thursday, just I could not get my head wrapped around that for whatever reason. But because of that, I was actually able to watch the Tuesday night games. I had gone on a short trip over the past week and actually had the ability to sit down and watch basketball all day, which was actually quite nice. So I'm going to do a quick recap, or I'll do a recap of the games from the Elite Eight, and then I'll give you my predictions for the Final Four. And I know that if you're listening to this, by the time you listen to this, the game's either going to be over or almost over. I'm pretty sure the first game started at 5, right around 5 o'clock. So as I'm recording this at 5:35, I'm sure the first game is underway. I've done my best to stay off of ESPN so I didn't get spoiled, didn't see any scores, because I want my predictions to be honest. And so I've done my best to keep it that way. So let's talk about the Elite Eight. So the first game we had was Oregon State, the number 12 seed, against the number 2 seed Houston Cougars. So honestly, I don't know a whole lot about those two teams. I didn't get to watch the Monday night games. So Oregon State, I know that they're a 12 seed. I know that they barely made it into the tournament, and I know they've pulled off some upsets since then. So I know Quentin Grimes on Houston. That's the one name that I know. I've heard some things about Sasser and Gorham. But that's about as far as it goes. I know Quentin Grimes. And looking at the box score from Monday between these two teams, it looks like Quentin Grimes and Sasser were their main two players. Grimes had 18. Sasser had 20. And actually Jaru, if that's how you pronounce it, was actually just a little shy of a triple-double. So he had 10 points, 8 assists, and 8 rebounds. So a good game there from him. Oregon State had two guys in double digits, one of them being a bench player. So I can see where the disadvantage was for Oregon State, and Houston won as expected. Looking at the Arkansas game. So it was Arkansas-Baylor. Obviously, Baylor, the number 2 team, and they were number 2 for most of the season, did as expected, and they beat Arkansas. Honestly, I did not expect Arkansas to get this far. Arkansas actually had five players in double digits. So, I mean, they played really good basketball. They didn't have anybody with more than 8 rebounds, so they struggled on the boards. And yet, other than points, they really struggled across the board. There wasn't much going on for them. Whereas Baylor had 4 guys with double digits, and actually they didn't have a player over 5 rebounds, or over 6 rebounds, sorry. So Teague led the way with 22 points, which was expected. But neither – this game really wasn't – I don't know. Baylor didn't play as well as I expected them to. I don't know. Again, I didn't watch that game live, so I can't really give my full feedback other than what the box score shows. Now, the next two games, I can give my feedback because I actually watched the game. So I formulated my own opinions based on what I saw on the basketball court. And the first thing I saw was, number 1, Evan Mobley, USC star player, 17 points, 5 rebounds. Evan Mobley, for the majority of the game, I didn't even realize was even playing. And it's not because I didn't watch, but it was very rare that his name was called out. And for being a star player, I mean, yeah, he had 17 points, but he really wasn't that effective, in my opinion. Now, again, he's playing Gonzaga, who is playing outstanding basketball. But I expected more. Gonzaga, man, I could talk about them probably this whole podcast. Timmy, however you pronounce his name, the big man there with the mustache. And I say that because every basket he made, he had a mustache celebration or some kind of celebration. It was fun to watch, but it also got a little annoying after a while. But 23 points. And looking at his stat line, 23 points, 5 rebounds. And maybe it's the same way for the Baylor game and for the Houston game too. But the stat line does not show how effective this kid played, because he was outstanding. It just, every time he turned around, he had the ball and he was scoring or he was passing or he was doing something. Jalen Suggs, 18 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists. The kid played very well. Ayayi only had 9 points. I mean, he struggled, but he wasn't as effective as I expected him to be. But overall, as a team, this team played very well. Kispert was another one. It was outstanding. This team played like a solid team. And then the UCLA game, I was happy to see the outcome here. I will say that team up north, it's obvious that they were without their star player, without their best player. Livers, I don't know if it would have made much of a difference. I'm guessing it would have. But they had one player with double digits, and that was Hunter Dickinson, the freshman. 11 points. But he only had 2 rebounds. They just looked sloppy. Both teams, really, at the beginning, both teams looked sloppy. Now, the kid I want to talk about is Johnny Juzang. Now, this kid was outstanding, remarkable, incredible. Like, there's not much – I don't know if there's enough words for me to describe how well he played. It was fun to watch him get the ball in his hands because he could not go wrong. 11 for 19 field goal, 2 for 5 from the three-point arc, 4 for 5 free throws, 28 points. When he went down, when he went out injured, there was an obvious difference between the two teams because that's when UCLA started to struggle. But, man, it was fun to watch UCLA. The unfortunate part for them is now they get to play Gonzaga. And as much fun as it was to watch them beat Michigan, I don't think they can compete with Gonzaga. I'm going to be honest, I don't know that any of the other three teams remaining can compete with Gonzaga. Gonzaga looked that good. And my first thought, and I might have said this last podcast, I can't remember, last episode. My first thought with Gonzaga was that they don't play anybody. You know, their conference is weak. They don't play anybody. But when let me pull this up. I need to pull this up because, I mean, I could try to tell you and explain to you what their schedule looked like. But if I could actually pull it up and show you, it'd be a lot more effective. Okay. Let me pull up their full schedule here. I mean, 30-0. They're two games from going undefeated in the season. Okay. They opened the season against number 6, Kansas. They won by 12 points. Tim A had 25. The very next day, they played Auburn and beat them by 23 points. Tim A had 28. Then they go and beat number 11, West Virginia. they had 5 games canceled, including a game against number 2 Baylor, which honestly I'm kind of glad because now that savers that matchup for Monday night, most likely. They come back and they beat number 3 Iowa by 11. Right after Christmas, they beat number 16 Virginia. That's really it for the rest of the season in terms of big games. Then they come into the tournament. And yeah, of course, they smacked Norfolk State. They beat Oklahoma by 16. They beat Creighton by 18. They beat USC by 19. I mean, this team is legit, guys. We might see history here. This would be the first time in my lifetime that there's been an undefeated team in college basketball. I believe it was 1978 was when Indiana did it. So I think for those that are my age and younger, this is history right here. And it's not coming from your blue bloods, your Kentuckys, your North Carolinas, your Dukes, your Kansases. It's coming from Gonzaga. Man, I'm more excited to see it than I thought I would be. But I will say Tuesday's games were fun to watch. They really were. And I'm sitting here and I'm doing this episode and I'm getting texts about a base clearing brawl with the Reds. So that excites me too, because I like seeing a team fired up like that. I'll talk about that a little bit here when I talk about Major League Baseball, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what caused all that. Okay, final four predictions. So we have Baylor against Houston and Gonzaga against UCLA. As much as I would love to see these outcomes be differently, I would love to see, nothing would be more interesting to me than seeing Houston against UCLA in the championship. But it's not going to happen. I'll give my first prediction first. I'll give you the easy. Well, I shouldn't say easy in this season, but if I had to say there was one that was more certain than the other, I would say Gonzaga is the lock. Gonzaga over UCLA. I think Gonzaga has too many players to match up with UCLA. I don't think UCLA has enough to keep up. So I say Gonzaga probably wins by 18. I'll go with 18. I'm just going to jot this down because I didn't note my picks last week. So I'm going to jot this down so next week I can see how well I did. So Gonzaga by 18. And honestly, as good as Baylor is, without actually seeing those two teams play on Monday, I just don't know. I would love to see Houston. I know a buddy of mine said that he was in a tournament challenge where somebody picked Houston and Gonzaga in the championship. I think I'm going to go with the easy pick here, which is getting that Gonzaga-Baylor matchup that we didn't get during the season. So I'm going to say Baylor wins, but I think it's going to be close. I'll say by five. It'll be a late game, meaning the outcome will be late. So I think it stays close all the way till the end. Baylor goes up by 3. Houston probably misses a shot, and then they foul Baylor in order to get the ball back. Baylor makes both free throws, and then time runs out. That's my prediction there. That would actually be fun if that happened. I don't know. We'll see. But Baylor by 5, Gonzaga by 18. And then in the championship, since I know I won't have a new episode out before then, I'll say Gonzaga. I'm going to go with Gonzaga by 12 in the championship. So next week I'll look at the outcomes and see how close I was there. But that'll be fun. That'll be fun. That's what I wanted to do for March Madness with the bracket initially, but unfortunately it just didn't happen. So we'll go with it and see what happens. Like I said, it was very fun to watch everything that went down on Tuesday. All right, let's move over to the NFL. And we'll talk about that up to the break. And then after the break, we'll be all Major League Baseball. So opening day, like I said at the very beginning of this thing, that is my sport. So we will talk about that one after the break. But first, we're going to talk some NFL. We're going to talk about another trade. Another trade happened. So we're going to talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about the draft. I am not going to do my mock draft this week. I think that is better suited for next week's podcast episode. I think what I want to do is I want to do a quick one next week, and then I'll do my final mock draft the week after that. And then that should take us right up to the draft. Because I believe the draft is on the 30th. So, actually, you know what? Yeah, I actually have time to do 3 mock drafts before the draft actually happens. I'll for sure do one. I probably shouldn't say for sure because I know things change in the sports world. I will try to do one this next podcast episode. Just kind of my initial one. And then I will do my final mock draft 2 weeks after that, so 3 weeks from today. So the podcast episode that comes out on the 24th will be my final mock draft. And then I will only do one in between for the 17th if something changes, if there's a trade or something that makes me need to adjust. But I will do my best. The plan right now is to do one on the episode that comes out next week, so on the 10th, and then I'll do my final one on the 24th. And again, those notes have to be taken down because I will forget. I will get caught up by something. And forget to do it. So, yes. All right. Let's talk about it now that I've kind of taken up a lot of my time here by doing all that. But let's talk about these trades. So again, we see another trade go down. Actually, we saw 2 trades go down. And I don't see it. Well, I had it up and now it's gone. And I think I see what happened. I think my website changed on me. Well, okay. There it is. Okay. Yeah, my website changed. It went to a different article. That's wonderful. Okay, let's look at these trades. So the first trade, the Dolphins send the number 3 overall pick to San Francisco for the number 12 pick. They also get a 2022 first-round pick, a 2022 third-round pick, and a 2023 first round pick. So the Dolphins give up the number three pick. It makes sense, guys. For anybody doubting the move there, it makes sense. Miami is not going to take a quarterback, at least not at number three. So you might as well get more draft capital from a team that wants a quarterback. Now, if you had told me a team was going to trade up to number three for to get a quarterback, San Francisco probably would not have been on my list. But here we are. So San Francisco makes an interesting choice here, giving up two their first-round picks in the next two seasons. Well, really, their first-round picks in the next three. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, they give up their first-round pick the next two seasons. So they have the number three now this year, but they give up 2022 and 2023 first-round picks plus a third-round pick next season to draft a quarterback when you have Jimmy Garoppolo. So if I'm Jimmy Garoppolo, I'm pretty frustrated right now. We'll see what happens. Then Miami turns around. Man, it felt like less than an hour later. And they trade the number 12 pick that they just got from San Francisco, plus a fourth round pick and a first round pick next year to Philadelphia for the number 6 overall pick and a fifth round pick. So they move from so ultimately, here's what Miami did. They moved from number 3 to number 6. They gained a first round pick for the next two drafts, a third round pick next draft, and a fifth round pick this draft. Basically for the number 3 pick and a fourth round pick. So, some good moves by Miami, honestly. Because now, you say, why would you move from number 3 to number 6, ultimately? Here's what it comes down to. Miami basically just made the decision that Tua is their guy. Tua is their quarterback this season. That's what this shows us. And what this also does, so they don't need a court. They're not drafting a quarterback, so they can get out of the number 3 spot. But by staying at number 12, they're going to miss out on the playmakers that they probably want. Because at 12, Ja'Marr Chase will be gone. Kyle Pitts will be gone. And there's a chance you still also miss out on Devontae Smith. You miss out on Jaylen Waddle. If you want to go defense, you miss out on Micah Parsons, Patrick Surtain. You're most likely going to miss out on Sewell, the offensive lineman. So it makes sense. Now, Miami's in a little bit of a situation here, though, because who do they take with the number 6 pick now? Obviously, it depends on what happens in the 5 spots before them. But we know most likely at least 3 of those are going to be quarterbacks. So really the only question is, what does Cincinnati do and what does Atlanta do? Because as much as I want to say Atlanta's going to take Justin Fields, one, there's a chance that San Francisco takes him. And two, there's a chance that Atlanta doesn't go for a quarterback yet. I think that'd be silly, but there is that chance that they go with a defense. I mean, there's a chance they might even trade out of that position. I wouldn't put it past them. But here's the predicament that Miami is in now. Miami just signed Will Fuller. So they've got Will Fuller and Devontae Parker now at wide receiver. So they don't necessarily need to draft Ja'Marr Chase at number 6 if he falls there. They also have – and I can't find his name now, but they do have a tight end that isn't a terrible player. So, do they still take Kyle Pitts? I think that'd be a good choice, honestly. Now, the 49ers. The 49ers are saying that they're not – now, they've already come out and said they're going to keep Jimmy Garoppolo this season. But I'm also seeing that they're going to get his successor. And now the thought would be that they're going to get Justin Fields. But rumors are going around that they actually want Trey Lance. Now, I don't think that they needed to trade all the way up to number three to get Trey Lance. I think he would have been there probably at eight or where does Carolina draft? Carolina drafts at number eight. So he would have been there at six or seven. Philly obviously wanted to make a trade, so they could have traded with Philly and not had to give up quite as much. But I don't know. In all honesty, I hope they take Trey Lance, because then Justin Fields is still there for my Falcons. And then the hope is that the Falcons would take him. So we'll see what happens, but there's some interesting things there. And then the Eagles are going to move to number 12, and they're going to look at probably a Devontae Smith or a Jalen Waddle. Jamar Chase should be gone. Kyle Pitts should be gone by then. So I don't really know what they're looking for, but that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. All right, real quick, I got a few minutes left before break. Let's look at the needs for these teams. And I'll just go through the top 10 teams. We'll talk about their needs. Well, let's do this. Let's look at Walter Football, their mock draft. So walterfootball.com, that is probably my favorite mock draft to follow. We can discuss your Todd McShays and your Mel Kuypers and all that. I like Walter Football. So Walter Football right now, obviously Trevor Lawrence going number one. They've got Zach Wilson going number two. They've got Trey Lance going number three. So what they say here is the question is, which quarterback do they take? Justin Fields is vastly superior to Trey Lance, but there's a lot of speculation about Lance being the choice. So he is penciling in Lance right now, but may change this to Fields at a later date. It says Trey Lance has some nice physical tools and he's coming off a huge year in 2019. And I say 2019 there, folks, not 2020. Because North Dakota State did not play in 2020. Trey Lance did not play this past season. So we're going off of a kid that started 1 year in college, and that year was two seasons ago. And you're telling me that he's going to go number three ahead of Justin Fields, who led his team to the playoffs two seasons in a row, including the championship game last year? I don't know. I don't know about that. Falcons are taking Justin Fields, which, again, I'm perfectly fine with. If San Francisco wants to go after Justin Fields, have at it. I would be perfectly fine with Justin Fields falling to the Falcons. They have Sewell, the offensive tackle from Oregon, going at number five to the Bengals. The Bengals need offensive linemen. I've talked about that in excess. Kyle Pitts going to the Dolphins at six, like I said. Jamar Chase falling to number seven to the Lions. That'd be great for Jared Goff, having a top wide receiver. They lost Golladay. They lost Marvin Jones. So Jamar Chase would be a good consolation prize. Carolina taking Mac Jones. Denver taking Micah Parsons. And Dallas taking Patrick Surtain Jr. So looking at the team needs, again, I've got less than a minute here before I got to go to break. So Jacksonville taking a quarterback. New York, I mean – there's not really much to learn from here. The 49ers, besides a quarterback, need a cornerback, a defensive line, an offensive line, and a tight end. Now, could the 49ers throw a curveball and draft Sewell at number three? They could. And no one's talking about that, but I could see where that could be a thing. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is coming off of an injury, so that wouldn't be a terrible idea. But I don't know. The Falcons need an edge, a cornerback, offensive line as well. And we are back. Just to finish that thought there, talking about the draft, there's not a lot of uncertainty in the top five. I think San Francisco and Atlanta have the most unique situations of the top five. As I mentioned, San Francisco, I could see guys. Everyone's talking about the Bengals taking Sewell at number five. But could San Francisco snatch him up at number three? Now, would I give up all that draft capital to take an offensive tackle? I don't think I would. But look who they jumped ahead of by doing this. They were set to pick number six. They were set to pick number 12. That's right. They were set to pick number 12. So they would have missed out. But they also would have missed out on the quarterbacks. I think if you're drafting up that high, most likely you're taking a quarterback. But I'm just saying I could see a situation where they took or that where they at least looked at and talked about an offensive lineman. Atlanta, again, there's no certainty that they're taking a quarterback. I hope they do. It's being projected that they do. But they could go defense. They do need defensive help. All right, let's transition over to Major League Baseball. So, not yesterday. Thursday was opening day. And I was about 2 hours short of going to opening day. So I had went out of town with my wife's family for a couple of days. And I was on my way back when I got a text from a friend of mine saying he had an extra ticket to Cincinnati Reds opening day. Now, folks, if you're not from Cincinnati, you're never going to understand the importance of opening day in Cincinnati. It is a holiday. It should be a local holiday. Every place should be closed. We should all just be able to watch the Reds. It should be on every it should be like the president's speech. It should just be on every channel, no matter what, and that be that. That'd be amazing. That'd be great. Now, I didn't work, no, but when I got that text, I was just getting ready to leave where we were, and it was about a 3.5 hour drive back home. So I got home about 2 hours after first pitch, and that's just too much game to miss. So that's quite unfortunate. I was sad about missing it, but based on the outcome, I didn't really miss a whole lot. I will make it to a game this year. I will hopefully make it to 5 games this year, as there are 5 bobblehead games. There's either 5 bobblehead games or there's 4 plus a Funko. I can't remember. But either way, there's 5 games I want to go to, and I'm going to do my best to go to. Even if I have to sit in the cheap seats, which, by the way, are no longer cheap. I mean, they're still cheaper, but I miss the days of those $5 view level seats. Or the $10 bleacher seats. They don't have that anymore. I think bleachers are now almost double that, $20. Which still, again, I know, I get that. It's not bad. But it's not a value seat anymore. But even if that's where I have to sit, I'm perfectly fine. Just get me in the stadium. Let me watch some baseball. Let me cheer on my Reds in person. But opening day. So we had all these games. Out of all these games, you know, we had some crazy weather on Thursday. You know, we had rain, we had snow. It was crazy. It snowed in Cincinnati. It snowed in Detroit. I don't know if anybody saw the clip of that, but Miguel Cabrera swinging on a pitch in the middle of a heavy snowfall. It was crazy to watch. A nice little April Fool's joke for everybody. But it was fun. It really was. I wish my Red Legs would have pulled it out. Would have pulled out the W, but unfortunately they did not. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to spend some time going through the main teams, the big teams, the ones we expect to win. And let's talk about how they did for opening day. Now, again, it's one game. I get that. It's one game out of 162. There's plenty more. If they had a bad game, their season's not over. But again, it's opening day. To me, it's a holiday, and so I make a big deal about opening day. Two games were postponed, like I mentioned. So the Orioles-Red Sox game was postponed, as well as the Mets-Nationals, which the Mets-Nationals, their actual series was canceled or postponed. And that was because of COVID, not because of weather. But looking at this, so again, opening day was not good to me this year. My Braves lost, my Reds lost. It was rough. Now the Rays, they were able to win. So there's a little bit of consolation there, but my two main teams lost. So the Braves lost to the Phillies 3-2, off of a walk-off single in the bottom of the 10th. The Blue Jays beat the Yankees by one. So that's unexpected, really. The Yankees are supposed to be a very good team. I mean, the Blue Jays are a good team as well, but they're still very young. The Yankees are that, they're talking like this could be the year the Yankees play better than they've played in 11, 12 years. Going back to 2009, I think. That's a long time with no Yankees dominance. This is not the 1920s, that's for sure. Tigers beat the Indians. That's a shocker to me, the Tigers beating the Indians. Shane Bieber, the Indians are supposed to be the top team in that division, besides Minnesota, who also lost to the Brewers. The Pirates beat the Cubs. I mean, what's going on? Opening day was not good to these normal teams. The Padres, they won as expected, although it was a close game. The Dodgers lost to the Rockies. What's happening? The Rockies get rid of Arenado, their best player, and they somehow beat the World Series champion Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw takes the loss there. A 7.94 ERA for Clayton Kershaw. The Rays win 1-0 over the Marlins. I'm telling you, the Marlins are a young and upcoming team. They're just in a very tough division. To be in a division, I couldn't imagine. To be in a division where you have the Braves, the Phillies, the Nationals, and the Mets, all four. I mean, I could draw any of them out of a hat to win the division, honestly. And to be that fifth team there, the Marlins, the up-and-comers. The Royals beat the Rangers. That was a very high-scoring game. The Angels beat the White Sox. In my opinion, that's an upset. Raisel Iglesias gets the save there for LA. The Astros beat the Athletics. Actually, they smacked the Athletics, which, in my opinion, isn't that big of a surprise. And the Mariners beat the Giants 8-7. Let's look at some of these games. So there's some players I want to talk about, and we'll go through this. So let's look at the first one, Atlanta and Philly. So Ronald Acuna goes 2-for-4. So that's a pretty good game. Ozzie Albies goes 0-for-5. You can't have that. Freeman 0-for-4. You can't have that. That can't happen. He walked once, but that's not enough. Ozuna 1-for-5. Swanson 0-for-4, Austin Riley 1-for-3. I mean, this is just this is a rough game for their hitters. Pablo Sandoval did pinch hit and hit a home run, so that was their two runs right there. But even looking at the other side, 1-for-4 for McCutchen, Hoskins 1-for-5, Harper 1-for-4, Realmuto 2-for-4, Segura went 2-for-5. I mean, there really weren't. 9 hits compared to 7. I mean, that was a close game. Fried had a rough start. 5 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 3.6 ERA. It's not terrible, but to be the ace, that's it's not great. Austin Nola on the other side had 6.2 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 2.7 ERA. 6 strikeouts compared to 8 for Fried. So that's the one thing Fried had going, was he had the strikeouts going for him. All right, let's look at Let's look at my other team. So let's look at the Reds Cardinals. This was not a fun game to listen to. First, top of the first inning, 6 runs for St. Louis. Luis Castillo gets smacked around, makes it 3.1 innings, gives up 8 runs. I put his ERA at 12.46 ERA. 94 pitches and 4.1 innings. Or I'm sorry. That's Flaherty. Luis Castillo, whew, I thought that was bad. 3.1 innings, 8 hits, 8 earned runs, 10 runs, no strikeouts, 21.60 ERA. 21. The guy that came in and relieved him didn't even make it an inning. Gave up an earned run. 13.5 ERA. Now, from there, we were fine. Romano, Fulmer, Doolittle didn't give up any runs. Actually, only gave up 1 hit out of the combined. But 21.60. This is the Luis Castillo from 2 years ago. No, this is not. Now, it's good to see that Flaherty got rocked as well. But from there, their pitchers were fine. Paul Goldschmidt, 4-for-5. Arenado, 2-for-5. I mean, Castellanos went 3-for-5. And Winker went 2-for-4. And so did Jonathan India. But guys, outside of those three, that's it. That's all we had. We had 2 other hits the entire game. 3 other hits. Sorry, I missed one. But the one thing I heard over and over during that opening day game was, now Luis Castillo is known for his 2 pitches. He's known for his fastball, and he's known for his changeup. And for whatever reason, now those 2 pitches worked for him 2 years ago. But for whatever reason, he decided to try to add a 3rd pitch and learned a slider. And that's fine if you want to increase your repertoire. If you want to add a pitch, that's fine. But in the past, where he would looked at a changeup to strike a guy out, he kept trying to rely over and over and over again on the slider. And I mean, look at the outcome. 10 runs in less than 4 innings. I couldn't tell you the number of times that the announcers were even calling him out for that. For always trying to use that slider. It's like he was trying to prove a point with that thing. It's like he was trying to prove that he learned it and that's a good pitch. Dude, you gave up 10 runs. Give it a rest. So hopefully this was a learning moment for Luis Castillo. He comes out next game and he's fixed it. He goes back to what he knows works. Now, looking at the Reds on opening day. You say they lost 11-6. They got smacked around. And they did. They really did. But let's not forget, Sonny Gray. Well, even before Sonny Gray, Trevor Bauer. Had the Reds spent the money and signed Trevor Bauer, he would have been our opening day starter. All right, so that's one starting pitcher gone. All right, so round two. Let's look at opening day last season. Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray's injured. That's our top 2 pitchers now out of the loop for opening day. 1 to injury, 1 to another team. So now we go to our number 3 choice, Luis Castillo, who shouldn't be that bad. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. I give no excuse. I give no benefit of the doubt to Castillo because it was a poor choice of play calling. Of pitch calling. And I don't know if that was his, I mean, it had to be his choice between him and Tucker Barnhart. or him and Tyler Stevenson. But I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they were missing the two pitchers that should have been in that role. They were also missing Shogo Akiyama, who is supposed to be their outstanding player, their international player, the next Ichiro, out with an injury. Michael Lorenzen, who would have been most likely a relief pitcher in this game. If not, he for sure would have been a pinch hitter. He's not there. So a lot of injury issues there. Players we need to get back. The funny part is I think Jesse Winker loses out on this when Shogo comes back. Depending on Senzel. I mean, Senzel has injury issues. So we'll see what happens. But opening day was definitely a rough start. All right, let's look at a few other games here. Blue Jays Yankees. So this was a big game. The Blue Jays, an up and coming team. You got Vlad Jr., you got Biggio, you got Bichette, you got these second generation players. And then you have the big bad Yankees, the evil empire, the Bronx Bombers. Biggio goes 0 for 5. Bichette goes 0 for 4. Vlad goes 1 for 2 with 2 walks. The player that's missing here, surprisingly, did he not go? Well, now I'm confused. Hold on. Did George Springer went to Houston, right? Or went to Toronto, right? George Springer. Injured list. Okay. I missed that one on the injured list. I was going to say they have the brand new player who's a good outfielder. They injured. So a lot of teams facing injuries with their top players. But the three I mentioned, Biggio, Bichette, and Vlad, a combined 1 for 11. And they still pulled out the win. Gurchuk played center field, 2 for 4. Hernandez played right field, 3 for 4. So that was who helped them win. The Yankees, LeMahieu, 0 for 4. Judge, 1 for 5. Stanton, 0 for 5. Torres, 1 for 4. Gary Sanchez, 2 for 3. So he's been their shining star. Garrett Cole, one of the projected best pitchers in baseball. 5.1 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits, 8 strikeouts, 3.38 earned run average. Against Ryu for Toronto, 5.1 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, 3.38 ERA. So the same ERA, just got there but from different methods. Actually, no, they didn't get there by different methods. They gave the same amount of runs. That's what it was. Ryu gave up 1 less hit and had 3 less strikeouts and 1 less walk. All right, let's look at the Diamondbacks Padres. Padres are the next big thing in baseball. They're what everybody's talking about. And they won 8-7. So they hit like we expected them to hit. Pham 1 for 4. Tatis 1 for 5. Machado 0 for 5. So they're two big guys, Tatis and Machado, weren't even the ones that produced for him. Eric Hosmer 3 for 4. Cronenworth 2 for 2. And Caratini 2 for 4. Couldn't even tell you who those guys are. For Arizona, Ketel Marte, however you pronounce his name, 4 for 5. So he's played outstanding. Asdrubal Cabrera, 2 for 5. Clint Walker, 1 for 4. Let's look at their pitchers. Madison Bumgarner, who a few years ago was one of the top pitchers in baseball, 4 innings, 7 hits, 6 runs, 13.5 ERA. Ouch. Yu Darvish for San Diego, 4.2 innings, 8 hits, 4 runs, 7.71 ERA. So, man, the aces on opening day. I think the best one we've seen so far was the Yankees Toronto game, Garrett Cole and Ryu. 3.38. That's the best the aces have done. And even looking at the hitters, it's not the star players that are the ones that are shining on opening day. All right, let's look at the defending champs, the Dodgers, playing the Rockies. This should have been, by all means, a blowout with the Dodgers winning, and yet the Padres win 8-5. Mookie Betts, 2-for-6. Cody Bellinger, 2-for-4. So, I mean, their star players were hitting. Colorado, Trevor Story, 2-for-5. Blackman, 0-for-3. CJ Cron, 2-for-4. Let's look at the pitchers. So Clayton Kershaw, 5.2 innings, 10 hits, 6 runs, 5 earned, 2 strikeouts, 7.94 ERA. Jermaine Marquez for the Rockies, 4 innings, 6 hits, only one run, 6 walks to 2 strikeouts, though, 2.25 ERA. So, a lot of ups and downs on opening day. Glancing through real quick at yesterday, so the Orioles come back after having game one postponed. They beat the Red Sox 3-0. So, John Means, which I want to see, did he pitch a complete game? Very well might have. As soon as this loads. Nope, 7 innings. 1 hit. So he had a 1 hitter going through 7 innings. And he did throw 97 pitches. No, that's not right. Yeah, 97 pitches. So that's why they took him out. But a 0.14 whip and a 0 ERA across the board. That's outstanding. The Rays start 2-0. Dodgers come back and make up for that loss by winning 11-6. Trevor Bauer comes out and has a no-hitter through 6 innings in his debut. I did watch a replay of one of his pitches that was absolutely outstanding and gross. I mean, he had a curveball that, I mean, that guy had no chance. Astros are 2-0. Padres start 2-0. So let's see. Let's see if their two big guys did anything. And then we'll look at today before we shut this down for the night. Let's see. So, Ketel Marte, again, 2-for-5, so another good day for him. Tatis, 0-for-3. Machado, 0-for-2. So, I mean, their top two players are not doing a whole lot. And again, the two starting pitchers here, 4 innings. I think we're going to start seeing less of these 7-plus innings that we're accustomed to seeing. Teams are building better bullpens to be able to take the brunt of everything, I'm afraid. I personally like seeing the starting pitcher that can go 7, 8, 9 innings, complete game. Let's look at today. So we're in the top of the ninth. The Braves are down 4-0. So this is rough. The Reds come back. They're up 9-3 in the bottom of the sixth. So, again, I talked a little bit about the the brawl. So I said I had received that. I received that text about there being a fight. So what it looks like is Castellanos. Did he get hit? Yeah, Castellanos got hit. Had some words that he wanted to say, and then the bench is cleared. That's exciting. That excites me. I like seeing bench clearing brawls. I think it brings some excitement and some action to the game. And it's nice to see the Reds actually do it, because we went through the Dusty years where it just felt like that wasn't a thing. Dusty kept them all on the bench. Dusty never argued. He never, you know, defended his team. And what I've seen from David Bell so far is that he'll be out of that dugout real fast to argue. So hopefully some good stuff happening in Cincinnati for once. Astros are up big on the Athletics, 5-1. Tampa Bay down 1-0. Still early, top of the second right now. They're going for the sweep there in Miami. Houston going for the sweep there in Oakland. Yankees beat the Blue Jays today, so they come back after losing on Thursday, and they win 5-3. So a little comeback there. They're both now 1-1. The Orioles actually had – no, they didn't. Orioles played again today and again beat the Red Sox. So the Orioles now 2-0. To start the season, the Tigers also upset the Indians, beat the Indians again, so they're 2-0. Royals beat the Rangers 11-4. Cubs beat the Pirates 5-1, so they're both 1-1 apiece. And we will see how the rest of the games go tonight. So there's five games remaining, because as I mentioned, the Mets Nationals series was postponed. So we got the Twins Brewers for game two, Jose Berríos and Corbin Burnes, the starting pitchers. The Dodgers Rockies are split, so they're trying to close out their series. Walker Buehler takes the mound for the Dodgers, John Gray for the Rockies. Diamondbacks and Padres. So the Padres looking to sweep Arizona. So you got Caleb Smith for Arizona and Joe Musgrove for San Diego. Lance Lynn takes the mound for the White Sox as they face the Angels and Alex Cobb, trying to win the series there. And then Logan Webb for San Francisco takes the mound against Chris Flexen with Seattle, again, trying to determine the winner of the series there. So again, the Reds up 9-3 in the bottom of the sixth. So currently Suarez is up, and it is 1-2 count with one out, bottom of the sixth. Nobody on base. So hopefully the Reds can continue scoring, hold off the Cardinals from scoring any additional runs, and win a game. That'd be great. I would also love to see the Braves put at least a run on the board and actually show that they're playing. They've got one hit. They have been one hit today. So that's looking a little rough. But all right, that's going to do it for the podcast today. As I said, next week, the plan is to do my first mock draft. So I will find – I have a website. I just have to find it again where I can do a mock draft. And I will run – I might run a couple different versions just to see if it comes up any different. I will probably do one where I don't control any specific teams and see what happens. And then I might do one or two where I control my teams. So I might do one where I control Atlanta, might do one where I control Cincinnati, or I might do one, if I'm able to, I might do one where I control both during the same draft. But I will try to also simulate one where I don't control any specific team, just to see what the computer picks. And I'll probably only talk about the first round. I don't know if it'll only do the first round, but I will only talk about the first round. So that's going to do it for today's podcast. I will see you all again next week. Don't forget to check out my Instagram, Rounding Third Sports. Drop me a message. Let me know what you think. And I will talk to you guys again next week. Have a great week, guys.